Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Principal Technical Evangelist for the Microsoft Corporation, Jaime Rodriguez.
Hi, everybody. Let's see if we can get it to work. Okay. We got to try it quickly. Hi, everybody. I'm Jaime Rodriguez. I'm an evangelist here at Microsoft. And for the last 6 months or so, I've been building phone applications. Before, I was a Silverlight and WPF evangelist. So I know most of this stuff that you guys have talked about for the whole day. So my goal today is literally, you know, if you guys are learning a lot about Silverlight and all of that knowledge that you acquire is going to be useful on the phone. All of that data binding, MBBM stuff, all of that, you're ready for phone. You're going to reuse that on the phone. But one of the things that you do have to learn a little bit about when you get to the phone is performance. So my goal for today is to give you some very pragmatic advice on performance for the phone. It's going to be all about, hey, here's a pain, here's why the pain happens, and here's the pragmatic advice that you're going to have to use to get around or to, you know, to avoid that pain if you're going to develop a fairly complex Windows Phone application. I do have to introduce you to a couple concepts. I'm going to kind of recap and build up on some of the concepts that you learned for Joseph. So there's a little bit of overlap, but not a lot. And I have two disclaimers. The first one is I have 45 minutes to take you into like Jedi Windows Phone performance, and I'm going to go really, really fast. I did a cheat sheet of everything that I'm going to cover. So if you're online, go to the blog. There's a 15-page document that gets into the details of every little thing I talked about. So if I say something like, oh, virtualization is trivial, and you're like thinking, I don't know what that is, go read the paper and you'll find out that, oh, you got to do A, B, and C. And trust me, most of this stuff is trivial. It's as easy as I make it sound. So you should be okay with that. The next thing that my second disclaimer that I have is I build really big apps, right? So when I look at Windows Phone, I'm talking about building things like Twitter, Facebook, building some of the applications that are more complex. All the advice that I'm going to give you is Jedi type advice where it's more complex advice. If you're building a little task management or some, you know, cool game or something like that, some of what you're going to hear from me, you'll never have to use. But don't worry, there'll be enough tips for you to make it worth the next 45 minutes. So even if you're building something that's not too complex, you'll get a lot out of the conversation, out of the talk. So stick around. That's it. We're going to go from here on. It's really, really fast speed. Let's talk about the phone. You've been talking about Silverlight all day. We started, when we were going to build a phone, we said, hey, we're going to build a phone with Silverlight applications. We took Silverlight 3 and we moved it to the phone. Of course, the phone has some very specific hardware characteristics. You know, it has a DirectX card. That's a great thing. We can take advantage of more hardware acceleration than we do on the desktop because we have a guaranteed hardware acceleration. We know the APIs better, right? It has a very specific form factor. It has 800 by 480 display. Touch is the only way or the best way to do input. So we had to go in there and take Silverlight 3 and optimize it quite a bit to make the form factor fit, to make the hardware fit. And that's how we end up with really great Windows Phone applications. So again, you are a developer, you know Silverlight, you can code for phone. You just have to be aware of the optimizations that you have to do for phone and how you're going to get the most out of it so you can actually get the most out of the phone, get the most performance out of your Silverlight application. There's one fairly significant change that we did. It's a good change. It's a fairly transparent change, but here it is. If you're familiar with the desktop, on the desktop, we have one UI thread. This thread does everything, layout, rendering, you know, eventing, data binding, callbacks. Everything is done on the desktop with one UI thread. And that seems to be okay because we have much bigger CPUs, right? On the phone, we have two things that were slightly different. The CPUs are not as powerful, right? And we had this DirectX card that we had a guaranteed hardware, you know, card that we could take advantage of. So what we've done is we said, look, on the phone, we're going to have two threads. The first one is going to be the UI thread as you know it, and it will do input and, you know, rendering and layout and all the stuff that you know that Silverlight does. And then we're going to add a second thread, and we call it the compositor thread or the render thread. And this thread is just going to be there focused on interacting with the GPU. So this thread, for example, if you have animations like transform that are really easy to do on the GPU, this thread is going to focus on that and take care of those transform, those animations. It's going to tell the GPU how to draw buffers, and it's really going to help you get the most out of the GPU. Of course, by doing this, what we're doing is we're leveraging the GPU, and we're freeing up the CPU on the phone so that you can use it for your UI thread. So you're getting a double whammy with regards to benefits with our new model. Let me show you real quick a demo of this. So you kind of see both threats in action. All of these samples, you can go download the source. I'm not going to walk you through all the source because I want to chime in with a lot of content. But this is a very simple sample, right? I have an ellipse. It's got a storyboard. And it's going to do two things. The storyboard has two animations in it. The first one is a color animation. As you see, as it goes around the board, the color is changing. The second one is just a translate transform. Now, let me show you what happens when I block the UI thread. Notice that two things are happening. The first one is the color stopped changing. The reason for that is because the color animation is running on the UI thread, and that was completely bugged down, right? So the beauty of it is that the compositor thread, the render thread, kept running. It kept doing its work. So if you're actually doing a progress bar or something like that, it's okay if your UI thread's a little busy, your compositor thread is going to be running. And this is all seamless to you. If you open the source, this is one simple storyboard. There's nothing special in that storyboard. I just went in there, told Silverlight, or actually told Blend, create a storyboard that does these two animations, and then Silverlight distributes the work across both the UI thread and the render thread. It does all the work for you, and again, you got the benefits of having two threads do the work. So that's kind of a nice thing what you're going to get on the phone. That is the bigger change that you're going to take and that you're going to have as you move towards the phone. And it's all transparent to you, but you can also take advantage of it. Right? The beauty of it is you have this thread. Now we have to help you figure out, hey, how can we take advantage of what are the kind of things we can do? So let me go back here. You know, Joseph talked about counters earlier. We have the same thing. We have counters on the phone. You have here, by default, if you just create a default application, run it in the emulator like I'm doing, you will have counters that come up, you know, by default when you run it in debug. We have, you know, the counters that give you the frame rates for the compositor thread and the UI thread. Obviously, those you're aiming it to be at 60 for those. And then we give you, similar to Silverlight, the number of textures and render targets and intermediate render targets that we're creating. And then on the phone, we have this new concept called fill rate. And you turn all of these flags by actually, or you turn all of these features by just going in there and enabling flags in application current host settings, right? You just go in there saying enable frame rate or enable redraw regions and show me cache visualization. Let me show you some of these concepts because they'll be useful once we get into the pragmatic advice, how we're going to get the most out of the phone. So I'll go back here. And you saw Joseph talk to you about redraw regions. And I just show you a demo where my compositor thread does work regardless of whether the UI thread is bound. So here we have the exact same problem, right? Redraw regions is doing, you know, it'll just tint things that change every time that the UI thread is doing work, similar to Silverlight on the desktop. So the advantage of it here is that I have a compositor thread. So I have this little gem. It has a clip. If you see here, both of these gems are actually this same image. It's just got a little clip. This is a common thing that we do for gaming where, like, literally we just, you know, put an opacity, we put a mask, and then we show different parts of the image so we can actually, you know, get in there with larger assets that we reuse for other games and stuff like that. So let's say I'm going to animate this gem. The first one right here, it's actually going to animate on the compositor thread. So if you look at redraw regions, check out what happens. Look, it's traveling around the screen, and nothing is being redrawn, right? Remember, Silverlight only redraws when they have a dirty region, but all of this work is not being done, again, at the GPU by the compositor thread, so nothing's being redrawn. On the other side here, I have the exact same image, and here I gave it a non-rectangular clip, which is going to be running on the on the UI thread. So this one's actually going to bug down my thread, and you can see with redraw regions how often we redraw. This is not that different from what you saw earlier from Joseph. I'm just giving it to people that, you know, are watching online and didn't see the previous presentation. So that's just some of the things that you have to be aware of. The new concept that I mentioned earlier is this concept of fill rate. And this one is really interesting. Fill rate is this. Fill rate says, hey, how much am I sending to the GPU on the phone, right? It's a phone. It's got a GPU. It's a powerful GPU. But let's face it, it's not one of your, you know, GPUs on the desktop, so it's not as powerful. We have to be cautious about what we do. So we have this concept of fill rate. It's this counter right here. And you can see here I have a list box. And you can see here, like, I have cache visualization on, which is going to put a blue tint on any surface that I'm sending to the GPU. So you can see here my list box right here is actually bitmap caching all the list box items. And they're actually, you know, in there. They're being hardware accelerated. Even then, I'm actually looking at a fill rate that's only something little like 0.2. A fill rate of 1.0 means I'm actually sending 800 by 480 to the GPU. The GPU is actually optimized or is actually capable of very easily doing 2.5 screens. And we're not sending, so think about it. If you're sending a panorama that has like 5 panel items, we never send any of the bits that are not on the screen. So for you to do a fill rate of 2.5, you really have to put a lot of stuff on top of each other and start drawing, you know, a lot of, start compositing a lot of UI in order for you to fill rate of 2.5, to get a fill rate of 2.5. Let me show you, for example, you know, kind of how you could do that if you wanted to. You can see here I got my surfaces. I have a fill rate of only 0.2. If I go in here and I add a background onto the whole page, my fill rate immediately goes all the way to 1.0 or near 1.0. There's a little bit left over because of the system tray. But that means I'm just drawing more. And honestly, if you look at this exact demo without cache visualization, it looks the exact same because I just put a background on something that already had a black background. But I'm just sending more onto the screen. Now, look at the list box items right here. They're all bitmap cached individually. If I show you, for example, something where I put an opacity mask, that changes the surface that Serialize created, and they're really optimizing how many surfaces they're doing and how they create it. Opacity mask is a really bad thing to do. So that one just kind of got rid of our bitmap caches, and now we're actually rendering on software in there, and that's why we saw the actual surface that we're sending with regards to the leaks box change. Now, opacity mask is bad, but it didn't increase my fill rate. If you look at that number, the fill rate is still 0.9. So let's look at other things that can actually increase our fill rate. I can go back here, and I'll do a plane projection. I have this page, and it has a render transform. It's empty. There's nothing in it because I haven't transformed it. I'm not going to animate it. But if I go in there and I say, look, let's set the render transform to be a plane projection, right, as if I was going to move it on 3D, boom, my fill rate just went up a whole point, right? This is one of those areas where Silverlight 2 aggressively optimizes for me. If you put a plane projection on anything, Silverlight will say, oh, they're going to fly it around the screen on 3D, so we must cache it. Right, and what they did is like they increased my fill rate by a whole point on the page, which is the biggest thing that they could have done, right? And I didn't need it because I haven't started my animation, so I could have waited, right? Now, if I hadn't done it that way, I could have waited, done it right before my animation, and they would have, you know, I would have put the frame projection and removed it, and my fill rate would have been, you know, lower, which means I'm sending less over and over to the GPU, which is what we want to do. So now we're like at 1.9. If I scroll a little bit, you'll see I'm now at a 2.4. I'm kind of borderline, like, okay, things are getting ugly here, right? Or things are getting to the point where I really should be looking at the perf and stuff like that. Last thing that I could do, for example, it's in the exact same screen. I can just show a little pop-up overlay on top of my screen, right? And I'll just show it in there. And now you see my fill rate go up to 3.5, right? Now, this is very atypical. It took me 15 minutes to figure out how am I going to get a page to have a fill rate that went from 0.2, which is the default that you would have gotten if you had gone into Blend and dragged and dropped the list box, right, to 3.5. But I wanted to show you that because I wanted to explain you the concept of fill rates, what it is. Right now, I'm sending it 3.5 the screens to the GPU to render. And I wanted to give you kind of like the concept of cache visualization. So you know when you're looking at fill rate on the counters, you can go in there, enable cache visualization, and very quickly you'll find out, hey, how can you make your fill rate lower? Again, even a fill rate of 3.5 would have been fine. You know, if I go in here, I'm at 2.5, and you can see here, I'm still getting, you know, 30 frames per second on this screen, which is actually being rendered on software because I put an opacity mask. So don't panic. You can go higher on fill rate, but it's just one of those concepts that you have to watch out because it's an important one. And obviously, fill rate has an impact on memory because it's actually caching, you know, it's creating bitmap caches and surfaces that are being cached on memory. So that's kind of where, a little bit of demos in regards to concept. Let's go back to the PowerPoint. And let's get into some really pragmatic advice and how we apply all those concepts. Before I go there, I do want to, you know, since you spent all day talking about desktop, I want to give you kind of my lesson learned. I was a desktop guy 6 months ago, and I built some mobile applications over the last 6 months. So I kind of had to learn how to do mobile. There were things that I didn't know that I painfully learned the hard way. So I'm giving you the advice so you make the, you know, so you know ahead of time what to design for. First one right here is 1 gigahertz. Sounds like a lot, but it's not that much. It's a phone. There's phone services. There's all other things running in there. You're not getting 1 gigahertz, right? And if you compare that to 1 gigahertz on the desktop where you had virtual memory and all kinds of other stuff, it doesn't equate. So people always ask me, like, well, 1 gigahertz a lot. It's not. When you get to the phone, it won't. So you will have to optimize your code. You will have to be smart. I'm going to give you the tips. Don't worry, but do keep that in mind. As you design your application, keep that in mind. Another thing that's different, on the phone, the user expects everything to be immediate. You know, on the, if you're on the desktop, you launch an application, it takes 10 seconds to boot up, nobody's going to throw it against the wall. On the, if you're on the phone and it takes 10 seconds for your application to come up, you're out of luck. The operating system will shut you down because you didn't come up fast enough, right? So the user is expecting everything on the phone to be very, very immediate. And this is something you have to consider because the phone has much greater network latencies than we've ever done, right? If you're a developer like me, you're coding on the emulator, you have Ethernet, and you're downloading data from Twitter or, you know, Flickr, and you're downloading a couple megabytes, and it's trivial, right? When you put that on the phone, that's going to take a few seconds. So you have to think about that and give feedback and proactively get into what am I going to cache, when am I going to cache it, and all these things. There's a careful balance that you'll have to do in order to get a really great application. The phone is a small screen, and my experience, because, you know, it might be personal for me because I've done mostly desktop applications that I move, like Twitter or Facebook or something, where there's a lot of data on the desktop, and I try to provide the same functionality on the phone. My lesson was, like, that's a really small screen, and if you try to bring as much data, you're going to have to do either a lot of screens and a lot of transitions across the screen, or you better tone down your data. So balance for both. With phone, we've done a lot of really great innovation in user experience. We have this thing called Panorama. We have pivots. We have really great ways to actually, you know, switch around screens a lot. But you still have to plan, how am I going to populate the screens? How is the data going to do? How am I going to parse? How am I going to do all these things that needs to happen? So these are lessons like you have to think about before you design your applications. You don't have to design it again later. The last thing that you have to know is touch is the primary input on the phone. And this is a really big difference from the desktop. If you're on the desktop, you have a mouse. And this is going to happen. You click on something, and whether you see a cursor or not, first of all, you'll see a cursor. Second, you know where the cursor, you know the cursor is on top of that link that you clicked on. When you're on the phone, you don't have a cursor. You can't really figure out where you put your finger. There's nothing in there. So the feedback and the responsiveness has to be immediate. Right? Otherwise, the user gets confused. When you're on the desktop, you hear the phone, you hear the mouse click. So the user knows that they click and they don't click again. On the phone, they'll keep hammering on that button if they don't see something that tells them, you know, I'm ready, I got your orders. I'm just, you know, waiting for the network or whatever. So these are my considerations that I think if you're going to move from desktop to the phone, consider this, plan ahead, you know, and get creative on it. Perceived performance on the phone is a much greater, it's a more important factor you're ever going to learn about. I can have a screen that takes 3 seconds to go to a website and download the data, right? If you're going to Facebook, it'll take 3 seconds for you to download the newsfeed, right? And I have two choices. Choice number one is I do nothing, and the user that's looking at the screen, those 3 seconds are going to feel to him like they're 5 seconds because they're looking at us, they're staring at a blank screen, and you know what happens when you're staring. It feels longer. On the opposite side, I can simply put a progress bar, and those 3 seconds are going to feel like 1.5 or 2 seconds, right? So to the user, perception-wise, you had a 3-second difference on performance, when the reality is both queries took a second. So be smart, get ahead of the competition, and actually plan for perceived performance as you go onto the phone. This is what I'm going to cover. This is where we get really pragmatic. This is where the lessons learned come. I picked up the 4 most common topics that developers come to me and say, hey, this is where I struggle. Again, these are for really big applications. This doesn't mean you're going to run into them, but a lot of the advice will help you as you go along the way. So let's walk through this, you know, the scenarios and see what's happening. On list, here's what's going to happen. You have a list, and, you know, the list is going to have 50 items or 500 items or whatever. And your list has some data templates and complexity and a little bit of work. And then the user can go in there and try to scroll. And you saw what happened earlier. The render thread, right, the UI thread, is actually going in there and trying to parse the sample and going in there and trying to create objects and doing data binding and maybe image decoding and all kinds of other work. And the compositor thread, the one that you saw that doesn't slow down when the UI thread's bogged down, that thing is just flying around with scrolling. Right? So what you're going to get is if you have an application that has a list, the list items are too complex or you're doing too much work, you're going to see these glitches where like your list starts scrolling and then you see like black screen, you know, little black pieces where like it looks like one UI item was not yet rendered. And the reality is it's not yet rendered. The compositor thread is going in there at 60 frames per second. The UI thread is going in there at 15, right? And you see these little glitches. So what do you have to do? Well, it's pretty simple, right? Avoid doing, you know, a lot of the work when you're actually scrolling, right? The bigger problem in here with regards to scrolling is the virtualizing stack panel on the list box. The reason for it is because that guy's trying to help you. So if you give him a list with 500 items, he's going to virtualize it and only create the first three screens worth. He thinks he's doing you a favor but not doing all the work. The problem is when you start scrolling, he's going to have a lot of work to keep up, right? And sometimes he doesn't keep up. So if you have a list that has only a few items, maybe it has 50, maybe it has, you know, I never count by the number of items. I always tell people count by the number of screens. If you have a list that's three or four screens or whatever, just use a regular stack panel. That guy's going to go in there and expand all your items at once, and then your scroll is going to be smooth because it's going to be all done on the render thread and everything will be fun, right? If you have, if you actually can afford to do that, just go ahead and do that if your list is short enough. If you have a lot of work, regardless of the number of items, if you're doing a lot of work, like downloading images or doing some other crazy stuff, computing some advanced numbers or calculations while you're displaying your list, then delay the work during the scroll. Just don't bug down the UI thread. Delay the work. Let the actual compositor thread do the scrolling. And then when that stops scrolling, you will have an event that tells you scrolling just stopped. And then you can go in there and populate the rest of your data and make sure that you do all the work. A converter is a good example, right? If you learn about data binding earlier, if you're using data converters, that's a pretty big transition that we're doing from data binding layer up in the framework all the way back to your code where we have to call your converter just to get the value that might be scrolled off the screen, right? So if you avoid converters, just you learn about view models, put a view model that has the right property or the right value, or delay that work, and then your list is gonna scroll a lot better, right? So how do you do all this stuff? And I want to make sure that you live with recipes. I'm not going to give you just the theory. Everybody knows that you can use a stack panel for a list box. You go into Blend, you right-click on it, you replace the items container template, and you're done. 2 minutes, you're done. If you can't afford to use the stack panel because your list is long, then we have this new control called the Long List Selector. It's shipping with the Windows Phone Controls Toolkit, Silverlight.Cloudplex.com. It's free. You get the source, the usual. Right, it's kind of in beta mode right now. If you go use it today, make sure you download it from TFS because the release from October still had a few bugs. We've got it pretty sharp now. It's it's getting ready for prime time. We're going to update it into final release, and it's getting there. The scrolling on that thing is smooth. It gives you a lot of knobs where you can control how fast, how much you scroll, all the other stuff. So it's really it's really good for the phone. It's really been designed and optimized for the phone, as you can tell from the name, Long List Selector. Right. Another one that we have is David Anson has this thing called a deferred load list box. This is just a list box that uses a stack panel, like I told you, but it defers creating the items until you really need them. It doesn't really do virtualization, so the caveat with that list box is we will actually go in there and we will start creating the items on demand, but we never throw them away when they're off the screen. So the deferred load list box can actually end up with a pretty long list. If it fits your scenario, you can use it. It's just as easy. I'm for long list select. At this point, that's my new favorite, and that's the one that I would recommend. But you can use the other one. If you have a short list that's doing just way too much work, right, then we have this recipe from Peter Thor called the Lazy List Box. And all of these links you'll be able to click on, and I have demos and explanation on the demos that you can download from the blog post. So what the Lazy List Box does is it simply says, look, I'm going to listen for when scrolling begins. And then when scrolling begins, I'm just not going to do certain work. And then whenever scroll ends, then I'm going to go back and do all the work for the items that are on the screen. Think about it. On Twitter, when we go in there on Twitter as an application and you scroll, you could scroll through 100 tweets, which means I would have had to download 100 avatars that you will never see because you just scroll them in and out of the screen. Right? So what we do there is we just use something similar to Lazy List Box and we delay downloading the images until we're done. And then when we're done, when the scrolling stops, then we go in there and download the images. If you have a Windows phone, look at the Twitter app. It's exactly what it does. Netflix and several others do the exact same thing. And all of these, you can just go download the source, and it's very easy for you to tweak and apply for your own applications. We also have this thing that you must use called Low Profile Image Loader. What Low Profile Image Loader does is it's literally a little extension that we use, where if you have in a list box that has images, we're going to go in there and do the downloading and the decoding of the image on a background thread so that we're not bugging down your UI thread. It's easy to use. You go in there, you download a class, you plug it in, and you're done, right? And it's going to make a huge impact with regards to how much work you can do on your UI thread now because we're no longer doing all this work that we were doing on the UI thread before. So if you follow those four pieces, you'll definitely end up with really smooth scrolling list boxes. Another complete I get from people are, hey, you know, my phone just feels unresponsive. So what's going on there? Well, I told you already, it's a phone. It's doing, you know, the operating system is doing work, the background threads are doing work, the ones that you create are doing work, and then your UI threads doing work. And, you know, all of the touch, all of the input, which is what people perceive as responsiveness, is being done on the UI thread. So if you happen to starve your UI thread, which is very possible to do, and it's not that hard to do, you know, your phone won't be responsive because you're not processing input, right? And there's two ways to start a UI thread. The first one is you do a lot of work in the UI thread. I've done it. Everybody's done it at some point, right? Otherwise, Joseph and I wouldn't be talking about it, right? Or the other one is ways to, you know, on the phone to actually starve the UI thread by just creating so many background threads. You can say, oh, I was really smart. I did everything on the background. But you end up doing so much work that you're still starving the UI thread because you have like five background threads parsing XML and making network calls and doing other stuff. So you have to make sure that you're not starving the UI thread. And the answer here is pretty simple. Just free it, right? You know, get smart about how much you're doing on the background. Get smart about what you're doing on the background. A couple slides from now, we're going to talk about virtualization and how panoramas and pivots. And you have to be very proactive about, hey, I'm doing work ahead of time because I know when the user clicks this button, I want it to be very immediate that they get the data that they want back. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you balance that out with how much data you download and process ahead of time. So you just got to be really smart about it. You know, if you manage to own your server side, so if you have a website where you own the server side and the phone application, then it's trivial. You can do a lot of that work server-side. You can prepare your object model such that you only download the right things, it's got all the right joins, it's got all the right stuff so that it's very easy for you to process and you save a lot of client-side work. These are things that we take for granted on the desktop, right? On the phone, they're going to make a difference, so you have to get smart. If you do have to do a lot of background processing, you know, if you need three or four background threads to be running and parsing and stuff like that, then just don't starve your UI thread. Go into your code and you're in the background thread and then just say, look, every now and then, just go to sleep. You know, like every, you know, 200 milliseconds or every 500 milliseconds, do your work, do your number crunching, whatever. But every now and then, just go to sleep, and that will let the UI thread run, and the user will never feel like the UI was unresponsive because the UI thread kept processing input and reacting to it as you went. The UI thread does run at higher quantum, so if you give it a CPU, it's going to take it and run with it very quickly. But you have to make sure you give it a break. You don't starve it all the time. So that's kind of what you have to do with regards to making sure that your applications are responsive on the UI thread. This is the, you know, really pragmatic advice on things that you should be doing because they're good for the UI thread and things that you absolutely should not be doing or avoid as much as possible because they're not good for the UI thread. I already showed you color animations. They run on the UI thread, right? So try to not do them. It's not that necessary on the phone. Honestly, you know, people are not looking that closely. You know, you can do them if you have to, but make sure that they're not in really big areas and that they're not long-running animations. And non-rectangular clips, we don't do those. We do those on the UI thread on the phone, so we don't do them on the compositor thread. Same from opacity masks. So make sure that you have items that you can animate, right? You avoid non-rectangular clips or opacity masks. It's a trick to use bitmap cache to get around it. I'll show you a demo in a minute. So it's not like I'm asking you not to use non-rectangular clips or opacity masks. I'm just saying you have to be smart about it. If you're going to animate them, get smart and cache them ahead of time, right? Pop-up on the phone is running on the UI thread. So when you pop-up, well, it's obviously running on the UI thread, but it's not hardware accelerated. So you know what? If you need something to be on front of some UI, just put in a panel and show the panel in, with a higher C index. It looks exactly the same than pop-up, and then you get the beauty of the compositor thread, right? So you got hardware acceleration, and you didn't have to do anything. The user doesn't suffer. It looks the exact same. The code is just as easy, right? And then be aware of callbacks that happen on your UI thread. For example, when you make an HTTP request, when you call an HTTP server using the web client API, that will come back on the UI thread. They do that because they think it's convenient for you not to have to make the context switch. But if you're going to be processing work, make sure that you use HTTP web requests because that will come back on the background thread. Then you'll do your work, and then you just call dispatcher.begininvoke and move on to the UI thread and update your UI. It's very, very simple. Geo-coordinate watcher is what we use on the phone to do location, and he has the same problem. He always calls you back on the UI thread. They think they're helping you, but if you're processing a lot of, you know, doing a lot of number crunching with regards to the data on that UI thread, you could bug yourself down. Same, of course, for background worker. So that's just how you keep your UI thread alive. Let's go down to this demo right here, and I'll show you. Are you guys seeing? Okay. Let me show you this. This is the exact same demo, that I showed you earlier, right? Exact same demo. Remember the clip, the one on the right, or at least, yeah, and the one on the right on, as I see it on the screen. This one right here. Remember earlier, he was drawing all over because he was just, he had a non-rectangular clip. And what I've done here is I put it inside a canvas, and then I told, you know, the phone, bitmap cache that canvas. You heard Joseph talk about bitmap cache. It's a trivial thing. I just go in there and say cache mode equals bitmap cache. Now, when I animate him, he's running on the compositor thread. Remember all that drawing we did earlier? Right? This is two lines of code. All I had to do is get smart, measure early, and I'm done. Right? And now it's running on the compositor thread. It's got my UI thread free, and I'm ready to rock. I'm ready to move to the next slide, too. So he's moving to the next slide. Today? So, you know, so bitmap cache is really, really trivial. One-liner and you're done, right? Next problem that I type that I hear from people a lot is startup. Now, every application has or could have better startup, right? Like, nobody's got an application that thinks, oh, this is just so fast that I cannot improve it. So startup is not a problem on the phone. It's not like, oh, you know, every application is taking 6 seconds or anything like that. No, but everybody can benefit from having a slightly better startup. Think about what's going on in startup, right? There's assembly loading, so we're doing some I/O. I/O on the phone, obviously, it's slow. You know, it's a phone, so it's, you know, so the I/O is relatively slow. Make sure you're not loading too much, right? We're doing, you know, we do assembly loading, then do all of the object instantiation, then we start parsing your UI so we can render on the screen. These are all the things that we're doing, right? The big one is deserialization of state. This is where you go in there and say, well, I have cache, I have settings, I have all kinds of application data that I usually have to read. And that is the one that's going to be most impactful, in my experience, most impactful to startup and most noticeable, right? So when you think about startup, just figure out, hey, this is all the work that's going on. What could I be doing to make sure that the user is seeing UI, is seeing progress, and what could I be doing to delay some of this work, right? The answer is pretty simple. Use the splash screen. Splash screen, just like CLR on the desktop, is free on the phone. Just go in there, put a JPEG, and the operating system shows it for you. Right? You can go about it doing two tricks. You know, one is, you know, use a splash screen that looks like your very first frame in your app so that the splash screen comes up and then your frame comes up and the user feels like it was the same thing. They don't realize that your app wasn't ready and it took an extra second after the splash screen came up. Right? Another one that you could do, if, for example, you're calling, you know, an API that's going to take 2 seconds to come back because you're making a network call or whatever, use a splash screen that's a kind of a loading animation, and then, you know, animate that onto UI where you have loading with progress bar and everything, because splash screens are static. So it's this really static image, and you don't want to show it longer than a second, right? But if you just start up with a loading animation, look at the Facebook app on the phone, right? It comes up, you get a splash screen, and then immediately, you know, it kind of starts dancing around with the loading, and you can't tell the difference. It looks to you like it was just the application loading, and it's very seamless for you to actually get feedback onto your user very, very quickly with a splash screen. It's not a lot of work. And again, that gets you from the user thinking your 3 seconds took 5 to the user thinking your 3 seconds took 2.5 or 2, right? Keep your assembly small. Everybody knows this one. Partition your assemblies if you're actually, you're localizing and everything. Use satellite assemblies. This is common sense. Joseph talked about it. Everybody kind of knows this one. On the phone, media is content and not resource is a big deal. If you have an assembly that, you know, ships with images or videos or whatever, make sure you package them as content because then they're going to be in your SAP. They're going to be available, but we won't have to read them every time we load your assembly, right? So we can load your application and then go on demand start reading your images. If you make them as resources, then they're inside the assembly, and we have to read them as part of the assembly. So we're reading a lot more. Make sure you go in there and you say, hey, package it as content as opposed to doing it as resources. If you have assemblies that are big or expensive to load, just delay load, right? You know, show your UI first and then go in there and start loading the rest of your assemblies. It's very, very simple. The big one, again, that I feel like, you know, has made it the biggest difference on my apps is whenever we had to do application settings, right? Most of the apps that I work on had big caches. So whenever you go into application settings, this was the big ones. If you use the application setting class that comes out of the box, that thing will serialize to XML, which is the slowest, right? You could serialize to JSON, you could serialize, you know, binary serialization, those are faster, right? Our experience, and there's numbers out there, like binary serialization was 10 times faster than JSON.NET for a lot of our tests, right? JSON.NET was actually faster than JSON on the platform. So the data contract serializer that Microsoft shipped is lower than JSON.NET right now. We're going to fix that, but right now it's lower. So, you know, feel free to use JSON.NET because that'll be faster for now. And then XML was the slowest, right? So if you're using application settings class, we're serializing to XML, and application settings class is just loading everything onto the screen. Everything, you know, like literally goes in there and fetches everything as one big file. Then you just spend a lot of time serializing. Some of my apps, we went from like having 3 seconds of serialization to having like, you know, 500 milliseconds when we got rid of application settings and we got more granular into how we could be smart about what we're serializing when we're loading the screen, right, with binary serialization. So you can really make a dent on your startup time if you plan for your for what you're going to serialize and how you're going to read it. Delay content if needed, right? Panorama, which is beautiful control, you know, it's gorgeous and everything, that doesn't virtualize at all. So if you have a panorama with 5 items, literally, we're actually loading the 5 items onto the screen. We're doing all the parsing. We're doing all that work. They don't virtualize at all. The user is going to only see one at a time. You can go in there, and you know, some of the examples that I have that you can download from the blog post show you how you virtualize the panorama such that literally you just say, hey, load the first 2 screens, load the first panorama items, and the other ones keep collapse. And then as the user changes the selection, you keep loading the one that's coming, and you're always ahead. To the user, it's transparent. To the user, it's all free, right? But it makes a huge difference with regards to what your first startup was versus your startup if you had loaded everything at once. Pivot is actually smarter. It does virtualize. Pivot shows you 3 pivots at a time. The current one, the one that's before the current one in case you pivot to the left, or the one to the to the right in case. So if you're the next one, which is in case you pivot to the right. So for startup, it's relatively very easy to do all of this. These are all like 5 lines of code changes that you can use to make sure that your application is much, much faster. The last thing that we have, or the last thing that I hear people talk about, is memory. We don't have a memory problem on the phone. There's never a memory problem. Memory is usually fairly easy to control. There's a certification requirement on the phone that says, hey, you need to run under 90 megabytes of memory, right? That's a lot of memory for most apps. The only apps that I've ever seen had any kind of problem are actually applications that have images or maps, right? And maps are actually images. So if you're starting to download a lot of images, that is the one time where people actually have memory problems. I do want you to make sure you understand how we do memory. So you'll have your business object. You have all your UI with panoramas and pivots. We already talked about which ones are not virtualized, so you can optimize some of that, right? And then we have a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that, that you haven't, I've showed you earlier, that you don't normally think about, like, hey, what texture am I using? What bitmap, how much is getting bitmap cached? What images are getting cached behind the scenes? So these are things that as you think about memory, you will have to think about. It's very, very trivial. First of all, Peter Thor has a counter. We don't have a performance counter. If you look at the 5 performance counters that I show you, we didn't have one for memory. But Peter Thor has this little utility. You download it, you add it to your project, and it does all the work. It only runs on debug. It's safe, and it actually literally just gives you a counter. I'm going to demo it to you in a minute. So you can go in there and very quickly add a memory counter so you just know where you're at. If you need to virtualize your UI or do data virtualization, you can actually do that. If you have so much to actually show that you think you'll have to virtualize some of it, it's easy to do. There's a lot of recipes on the web, right? Again, I don't think you're going to have a problem there. The one that I think you could potentially see is releasing cached images, right? On Silverlight, by default, we actually try to cache images for you. Let's move back to the demo. And I'll show you in a minute. So we actually, by default, try to cache images for you on Silverlight. So let me show you real quick. This is a really trivial thing. I've got this demo right here. I'm just going to load 7 images. Now, they're high-resolution images. You can see here, this is the Peter Thor memory counter. It's right here on the, and it says, I just went, by loading 7 images, I went from 8 megabyte to 75 megabyte. That's ridiculous when I have 90, right? Now, normally you think, well, okay, that's high resolution. They're only 1920 by 1200. They're just high DPI. Now, let me show you the other thing that's interesting. So now I'm going to walk away from this page, which normally should just garbage collected. So all that memory should be gone, right? Well, if I come back into this page, the 71 megabytes are still there, right? Because the garbage collector is looking at that thinking, these are 7 bitmap images. These things are 200 bytes apiece. Why do I need to collect them? Well, the garbage collector, because it's managed memory, doesn't know that they're holding on to 2 or 3 megabytes of memory a pop, right? So what do you have to do? If you're dealing with images a lot, just force garbage collection. Look, you usually have to call it twice, but there, I'm back to 8 megabytes. It's not leaking or anything, so it's not like we're leaking the memory. It's just there, and the garbage collector was being lazy because he didn't think it was worth it, right? Now you just call collect and you're done. Now that's one way to do it. The problem with that is that would have gotten me to 10 images, right? Because, you know, I was at 7 at 75 megabytes. So what you have to do is different. If you're downloading from the web some really high resolution images, the phone can only do 800 by 480. So even if you're going to let the user pan around, you're still not going to let them pan around that much. So just do this. You know, download the images, download the stream, and recode them, like actually decode and encode them again on the fly right here using writable bitmap, right? I have the exact same 7 images, and now my memory went only from 9 megabytes to 12. And they're the exact same size. I was actually displaying them at, you know, 350 by 200. They look the exact same, but my memory is much, much lower. So it saved me all the trouble that I was worried about, right? That's how easy it is to do images on the phone. Those are the only things that you're going to have to worry about. Let's go back to the PowerPoint where you're going to actually be able to just, you know, literally, you know, avoid, you know, redecode them so that they're lower resolution and garbage collect them, right? So that's it. Those are the 4 pain points, and I've given you answers to all of them, and I've given you recipes. You can just click on the links, go download the solutions. Those solutions are the solutions we've been using for the last 3 months. Right, like, so you're hearing from David Anson or Jeff Wilcox and stuff like stuff that we've actually downloaded, or that we've used for a lot of applications already. It's pretty proven. You're just downloading code that works. You just have to incorporate into your project, right? Now, I have to emphasize before we move on. I have to say, getting fast is not good enough. You have to worry about perception. Worry about the feedback. Show the progress bar. Use, you know, Jeff Wilcox's performance progress bar because that one runs in the compositor thread, and you know, worry about those kinds of things. But don't rely on us to do the magic. If you're adding an animation like a progress bar or something, don't rely on us. Go look at the counters, go look at the flags, and make sure that you're running on the compositor thread like you think you would. You know, because every now and then you'll see that Silverlight gets too smart, just like they did with plane projection, where they got ahead of us, they added a field rate of 1, and then, you know, that hurt us. Some of that will happen every now and then. You got the counters, it's very, very easy for you to get around it. That's it. It's not hard to build really great, you know, performant Windows Phone applications. You just got to start with the right mindset. You got to design ahead of time and know how much code you're going to, or how much work you're going to be able to fit on the phone. And then you actually have to use the counters and test another device before you ship it if you have one. Find a friend. There's a lot of phones out there now. 6 months ago when I started, there was no phones. Right? Nowadays, there's a lot of phones out there. Test another device and you'll get the right stuff. All of that, I have a blog post that has, you know, a document with all this stuff. We have interviews with, you know, Shane Gillette, the perf test lead, that covers a lot of this stuff. We have perf white papers. We have a blog for the performance team. There's a lot of resources out there. There's no reason why you would have a slow performant Windows Phone application on, you know, using Silverlight. That's it. Thank you very much.